session number 10597, reel 1.
Mr. Masters, reel 1. What were you doing when war broke out in September 1939?
I was an apprenticeship right in HM Dockyard at Portsmouth.
And what was your reaction when you heard Chamberlain's broadcast?
Stunned. Yes, I could not believe, you know, that a war was going to start, although it had been building up for some time. You know, it was obviously trouble was going to be brewing, but actual war, was just, I say, I couldn't believe it.
Had you believed Churchill's Chamberlain's assurances that there would be peace in our time when you came back from Munich?
To say believed is difficult. To say hoped would be better. But of course, when it happened, that was the end of it. And I must say that I immediately expected, you know, bombers to come across and destroy the place, because there had been plans, you know, way ahead to look after casualties by the thousands. And the stories that they were telling us, you know, that was going to happen to a city, well, it was quite horrific. And it didn't happen. We wondered why, you know, and there was a sort of tenseness about the whole thing. I just like sitting here and saying, well, when is it going to start? And it didn't. But then when it did start, I think the first occasion we had was my sister was working at Airspeed in Portsmouth, which is the Portsmouth Airport. And her office was bombed, and she came home absolutely shattered. I think they dropped about 5 bombs in the city, but that was really the start of, you know, quite a nasty period of time.
When was this? In the autumn of 1940?
This was in 1940, yes. The bombing really started around about, well, end of 40, beginning of 41.
So you were in Portsmouth the whole time during that blitz?
That blitz, yes, yeah.
What do you remember of the blitz?
Well, I can remember going out sort of 2:30 in the morning and being able to read a paper by the light of the fires. The most upsetting effort was one night I was on home guard duty in the dockyard, and we were guarding the Admiral's office, the two of us. And we were expecting paratroopers to be dropped. And obviously, you know, all hell was let loose, the guns going, bombs dropping, and what have you. And a naval commander came up and said, what are you two doing here? You know, you better get under the shelter. But we said, you know, we're on guard. He said, you get down into that underground shelter there. And we said, well, we're expecting paratroopers. He said, do you really imagine that paratroopers would drop in the middle of this? He said, well, no, sir. He said, well, get down below. And we hadn't been down there long before a 1,000-pound bomb demolished the building which we were underneath. Well, then, I say, I was 16 at the time. All the lights went out. And then someone said, the dock alongside's flooding. Oh, my God, you know, we're going to be drowned now. And then we had to contend with somebody who was in his late 20s who had gone off his head with the explosion. We eventually, you know, somebody came and said, all right, this is the way out, and we got out and they put us in another building. Then I had to walk home in the morning, a matter of what, 3 miles. My bicycle was punctured, and I remember walking past Portsmouth Guild Hall when the roof fell in, you know, the whole lot was ablaze, and I wanted to turn down what used to be a shopping centre. And a fireman said, no, he said, you can't come down here, it's impossible. And it was just a tunnel of fire. So I went into a shop and I bought some cigarettes, and I said to a woman, what's happened to the city, you see? So she said, it seems to be devastated. So, oh dear me, you know, the parents and what have you are living about a mile from where we were then. Because when I got home, I looked in the road and, oh dear me, it was a shambles, you know.
What was the name of the street where your parents lived?
Bramble Road. That was in Portsmouth, just... And
when would this have been? Do you remember approximately the date?
I think it was about the 10th of January. I'm not absolutely sure. But anyway, the point was that there were several houses that were missing in the road. And I thought, well, what's happened to our house? And I went up to it, and there was obviously nobody in there. You could see that it was a dead house. And there's a note on the door. So I thought, ah, at least I should know the names of the casualties. But it was a letter from my mother telling me where they had gone, providing I got home myself, of course, you see. And she and my father had gone to one house, my brother had gone round to Dorothy's house, and I went round there and I found that everything was all right. But it was quite a nasty shock at the time. I mean, this was the sort of thing that was really happening all the time to all sorts of people.
You should say Dorothy is your wife.
She wasn't then, no. But she, you know, I mean, we'd been going out together for a little while then. And of course everybody helped each other, you know, I mean, if you were in trouble, even though I didn't know her parents very well, or her mother rather, if you were in trouble, people would help you. So
how was morale in Portsmouth affected by the Blitz? Did it make people want to give in, or did it make...
No, it didn't. No, it didn't. It seemed to want to, people to help each other more. But they began to recognise other people, which they would normally, you know, you'd pass in the street. You wouldn't even see them. But you then had a common problem, so you sort of seemed to work together.
So people weren't saying, oh, we can't stand this, we should come to an agreement with Hitler?
No, not, I never heard anything like that.
Did it make people more determined, do you think?
I think maybe it did, yes. You see, I think what happens is that you begin to get brainwashed under situations like this. And if people start to complain and say, well, what are you complaining about? You know, his house was knocked down, he's lost his family. So, in a sense, people didn't really start moaning about their lot in general. That was my experience, because I was only, 17 at the time then.
Some people say about the period of the Blitz that everybody was one then.
Oh, they were.
Is that true?
Yes, I think they were. Oh, that is true. Because if you had a problem, you could go and speak to somebody about it. I mean, you wouldn't, how shall I say, feel shy about it at all.
You mentioned the Guildhall and your particular street. Mm-hmm. Can you remember any other particular streets or areas of Portsmouth that were hit, or any specific bombs?
Well, yes, that was... Well, the road opposite the Guildhall, which was King's Road Shopping Centre, that was obliterated. In fact, I think they had one building at each end of the road. And I went down there a few weeks later, and I didn't know where I was. It was only a short road. You know, there was nothing I could recognise that I could say, well, yes, well, I'm halfway down the road, or anything like this. Then there was another shopping road, which an extension was Elm Grove. That was also very seriously damaged.
Did you get the impression that the Germans were attacking military or industrial targets like the docks, or that they were just bombing at random?
Well, now I can say it seemed to be at random. But in all fairness, they may have been aiming for the docks. We don't know, because I couldn't see what they could gain from bombing the houses, unless it was to destroy morale, but much more effective if they could bomb the dockyard.
Were there hits on the dockyard?
Oh yes, yes there were. I remember well, there were several hits, but you know, so it's a bit difficult to say any specific hits, except the one that I was under when they bombed the shed opposite the Admiral's office. But there was one of the American destroyers, one of these Leasland destroyers. They were very narrow things, and that got blown over on its side in a dry dock and trapped some men inside, and the whole thing caught fire. And that was quite a nasty effort. But there were a number of things. On one occasion, someone said to me, it was a landmine under a big crane, because it's a big fixed crane, it's a 240-ton crane there. And this was in the morning. We wandered around and had a look at it, and there it was, stuck underneath a big crane, something that looked to be about 8 feet tall to us. And the casing was cracked, and powder was coming out. So she said, should we go and touch it? Is it safe? Don't know, because we'd already seen we'd had experience of landmines, you know, and the devastation they could do. So, well, we were so close to it that, you know, it wouldn't have made a difference whether we touched it or not. But, you know, we sort of daringly went up and touched it. On the next day, I was walking alongside the ship's basin, and they put this thing in the water and exploded it. And it seemed to me as though the ground dropped away about a foot. And yesterday I touched that, and I thought, oh my God, a stupid thing to do. But landmines were very funny things anyway.
And what's wrong?
You couldn't hear them coming, and the next thing you knew was just a terrific explosion and a blast. Whereas with a bomb, you see, normally you'd have some warning. And you began to get used to this. You'd hear a bomb coming down and say, well, that's rather distant, so we won't worry too much about it. But if it was a short, sharp whistle, then you got down quickly. But on this one occasion, I was at home with my parents, and father said to me, what do you think is going on, son? I said, I don't know. Because we're just getting these massive explosions without any whistling. So I opened the front door to have a look out, and a landmine burst. I don't know where it was, but I got knocked flat on my back, and my father was halfway downstairs. He got knocked off the stairs. So he said, what do you think that was? I said, I don't know. He said, I think we'd better get to a shelter, don't you? And so it was all without any warning.
What did people think of the Germans? Did it make people hate the Germans?
This is very difficult, because you see, I think what it was, we were being attacked by an enemy we couldn't see. It's not like, I say, a soldier who was facing somebody, and I hate that person. When you're being bombed, it's you hate them because you feel you've got to hate them. You understand what I'm saying? And on one occasion, it may sound very strange, but I was watching a German bomber going over, and it was fairly low. It was at night, and they were firing at it. And I thought, I wonder what it's like for those people up in the aircraft. You know, are they frightened? Are they going to get home? And I felt almost sorry for them. But because the aircraft was so close that it became a personal thing, I don't know if you understand what I mean by this.
You could put yourself in their place.
That's right, yes. Yeah.
What did you think of the emergency services in Portsmouth? Did they function well?
I thought they were very good indeed, yes. Yeah. For, you know, for the amount of devastation there was, and particularly, you know, the way they handled things when they were caught on a hop, which, when I say caught on a hop, on one occasion, I believe it was the night that the dockyard was bombed, but the water pressure was very low for some reason, the tide was very low, and they were having difficulty getting any water at all. And I understand that the Germans had planned it this way. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, but you hear so many strange tales when, you know, in wartime, you don't know whether it's true or not.
Did you ever see any German planes brought down over Portsmouth area?
Yes, yes. I saw three RAF fighters after one, and it was at low level, and he just didn't stand a chance. Most of the bombing was at night, so we didn't see things like that. But I think we saw more RAF planes than nobody else come down. But you see, during the Battle of Britain, the things we were mainly concerned about were bombers coming over. The fighters weren't so, or a reconnaissance aircraft, that we didn't bother about so much.
What did people in Portsmouth think about the job that the anti-aircraft guns and the RAF were doing against the German planes? Did they grumble, or did they feel that they were doing a good job?
Well, I really wouldn't like to express an opinion on that, because I don't think I've got an opinion. I do know myself that when the Battle of Britain first started, we were in the house. Father said, "What's that noise?" It was a terrible droning noise. We went outside. I just couldn't believe it. But it seemed to be hundreds of bombers just coming straight at us. I mean, they weren't really hundreds, but that's what it seemed to us. I mean, we were only used to seeing sort of one or two aircraft occasionally, not in these masses. And I couldn't make out why they were still coming on, because they were firing guns at them. And I thought, you know, it's not very effective. But of course, I mean, I know better now that it's not always so easy to hit an aircraft with an anti-aircraft gun. But I was quite horrified by this. I thought, well, what are the fighters doing? But then again, you know, I mean, if I was to see the same thing again now, then I can express an opinion. But I wasn't able to express an opinion about that, really.
How did the Blitz in Portsmouth come to an end? Did it taper away or come to an end suddenly?
I don't know, because yes, I suppose it did end fairly quickly. Then they did try and start again, I believe. But this time I was probably a prisoner. Or would I be? No. No, because I wasn't taken prisoner until 44. But they started the V1s, I think it was the night I was shot down.
So you've got no experience of V-weapons later in the war?
No, my wife has, but I haven't.
Can you tell me how you came to join the RAF?
Yes.
And when it was?
Yes, well, I never imagined at one time that I would ever join any forces, especially in a case of war, because I used to hear tales of, you know, the 14-18 war, and I used to read books that my father had, and I was absolutely horrified to think that anybody could ever be involved in such a thing, and I thought, well, it'll never happen again. And then people, when I became an apprentice, people used to say to me, during the 14-18 war, people actually left here and joined the forces when they could have been safe in the dockyard. And I thought to myself, what stupid people, why did they do that? Well, then I had decided, or quite a while before this, that I wanted to travel. I think when I was 13, I wanted to be a sheep farmer in Australia and odd things like this. Then I wanted to be a boy telegraphist, and my mother said, you're going to stay at school. So I decided that whenever possible, I'd join the Navy. Well, then when I became an apprentice, because of the Naval Dockyard, and the war had, and I was of a reasonable age, I was able to volunteer for the Navy. Because I was just, 18 and a half then. And they said, well, yes, this is fine, you know, you're a third year apprentice, you'll be able to come straight in, trade test, you don't have to bother about, your medical is all right, now you won't, all you have to do is to get permission from the dockyard to leave. So I said, well, this might be difficult, because I had heard, you know, tales that they weren't releasing people. Anyway, I went to the main office and I said, you know, I wish to apply for release to join the Navy. They said, you won't get it. So I said, you sure? Well, we've had applications in, you know, they've taken 6 months or more for people to join the Navy, and they've all been turned down. So I thought, well, you know, my friends are joining the Air Force, so why don't I join the Air Force? So the following week I went down and joined the Air Force, and that's how I, you know, got in.
What did you think of the training that you got in the Air Force?
I thought it was very good. The only thing about it, I thought it could have been more condensed, because we did have sort of fairly long periods where they seemed to be filling in to our real training. But that is only from a personal point of view. I mean, I didn't know what the organisation was like. You see, when we came back, I was trained in South Africa, and when we came back from South Africa, we were hanging about for a while, it seemed. We were doing all sorts of funny little courses. I went with the Royal Scots Fusiliers for a fortnight up in the Highlands in early spring, which was...
To learn what?
Not to learn anything, but, well, just to see how they operated. And I was with an anti-tank unit. They were infantry regiment, but they were also mountain troops. But I was attached to an anti-tank platoon, I suppose it would be. That was very interesting, but sort of didn't help the Air Force very much. But there was a soldier in the back of a truck with me one morning, and he said, what's it like going over Germany? I said, I don't know, I haven't been. Oh, he sounded disappointed. So I said, I'm sorry about that. No, he said, I wish you had said, you know, that it was terrible, and you could have made up some stories. I said, well, what good would that do? Well, he said, I'd have had a different opinion of you. So that's nonsense.
Can you tell me about South Africa, about the training there, and the reception you got from the South Africans?
Yes. Well, when we first got out to South Africa, we went to East London, and we were met by an Air Commodore who explained to us that we were going to start our basic training. We pointed out that we'd already done that. So, so we said, what would we come here for? We said, well, we thought flying training. So we had to wait around for 5 weeks then before we were sent to Port Elizabeth, which was our flying training school.
And what did the South African attitude towards the war seem to be?
It was very mixed. We were introduced, there were three or four of us, were introduced to a family, and they asked us out to tea on Sunday. You know, we went to church with them and things like this. And one day, grandmother said to me, give me your teacup, I want to tell your fortune. So I said, no, I don't believe in things like that. She said, well, come on. And the family said, go on, Granny just wants to do it for fun. So, all right, well, just to amuse her, I passed my cup over, and she looked at it, and she said, I see a large convoy. I can see you on that convoy. There were, oh, I can't see how many ships there were. You were in a big convoy, weren't you? I said, I can't tell you things like that. So she said, was it 48 ships or something? I said, I'm not talking about things like that. And she said, there's a battleship, which was very strange, because normally a battleship wouldn't come down in a convoy. I said, no.
Was it true?
Yes, it was. Yes, all that she had said was true. And I said, no, I'm afraid I can't talk about things like that. Well, then she said something about, you will be in danger, but you'll be safe when others around you aren't, all this sort of rubbish, you see, which in actual fact proved to be true. But this family then passed us on. That was, what was that? That was in East London. Yes. When we went to Port Elizabeth, they passed us on to another family. And I was with a girl one day, and we were going to the cinema. The fellow came up to me. He said, you know that girl's a German spy, don't you? So I said, I don't know what you're talking about. He said, don't talk to strangers. I said, I have no intention of doing so. Good afternoon. And walked away from him. But it made me think afterwards, because we were warned that anything that was said in the morning to any agents there would be in Berlin by the evening. So that was quite common knowledge.
Did this girl seem to be pumping you for information?
No. No, she didn't. But her parents didn't seem to tie up. Her mother was much older. Her mother was an Afrikaner, and her father was an Irishman. And the father seemed to be a lot younger than the mother. And somehow they didn't seem to be related. But, I mean, this is all, hindsight. At the time, he's just a little bit puzzled.
Did you think that the lady who was selling your fortune might have been pumping you for information?
Yes, I do, but I don't quite know why. I didn't then. And I was discussing this with two other friends, you know, that had been shared in amongst these families. And when we were coming home on the boat, and I hadn't really mentioned this to anybody before, I said, it's all very strange, I said, but I've got a suspicion that we were mixed up with agents. And they both said, yes, we had the same feeling.
Did they give any specific reason for feeling that?
Not really, but it was just the questions that came up sometimes and the sort of relationship one with another that didn't seem to satisfy them somehow. So it was all very odd.
Which months were you in South Africa?
Let me just try and think now. I went out there about May 1942. Came back in, I think it was about February 1943, something like that.
Did there seem to be a difference between the British origin and Dutch origin?
Most definitely. Oh, yes. The Dutch origin were very anti. But the British origin people were very friendly indeed.
How did the Afrikaners show hostility? Did you experience any personally?
No. Except when tourists got left off a train. We were going from Durban to East London, and we had no idea where we were going, but they wouldn't tell us. All we knew was that we were being put on a troop train and we were going somewhere. Then people were running out of cigarettes and chocolate, so the pilot officer in charge of the detachment said, I want two volunteers to get off at the next station and get some chocolate and cigarettes for the other lads. So we went round, two of us, and we went round, collected money from the lads, and was at Ladysmith was the next station. So we got off the train, rushed up to the restaurant, closed. So someone said, there's a shop just down the road. And we'd been told the train would wait for 15 minutes. We'd only been there for 5 minutes. We had a box full of chocolate and cigarettes. And someone came and he said, train's just leaving. Leap into the car. So he took us back to the station just in time to see the train go. So I thought, well, the station people would tell us, you know, where the train's going and where we can